For Cybercrime Radio, I'm Heather Engel. This is Cybertide, a cybercrime magazine podcast series brought to you by Adlumin. Working to revolutionize the way organizations secure sensitive data, Adlumin finds the newest cracks being exploited and shines a light on correcting the issue in real time with expert guidance. To learn more about our sponsor, visit adlumin.com. That's A-D-L-U-M-I-N.com. I'm talking today with Mark Sangster. Mark is the Vice President and Chief of Strategy at Adlumin. Mark, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, Heather. It's always good to be working together.
So today we're talking about ransomware, specifically how to spot the signs of a ransomware attack and minimize the damage. So can you start just by telling us how ransomware has changed in the last few years? It's not just encrypting and denying access to data anymore.
You're right. So first, it's a multi-pronged kind of attack campaign, right? And looking for various forms of extortion. So one of them is what you've just described, which is the operational disruption that they create, encrypting all the files in the systems, and you're kind of paying a ransom fee to get your business back up and running. But then there's other elements of it. We see secondary extortion to avoid the exposure or acknowledgement, public acknowledgement of the event occurring. So this is the idea of, well, we have all your information. It's sitting on a leak site. You stole all your data and your customers' data. If you don't want that to go to the public, or you don't want us to contact your customers, your vendors, or the regulators themselves, you have to pay us some form of extortion fee. And then, of course, ultimately, I mean, these are criminals, right? They're going to sell the data anyway. But it's become, I think, a lot more devious as well in the last little while. So we're seeing ransomware attacks evade things like endpoint detection. And a lot of the times they're using tactics like they're already inside the environment. They've moved laterally. They've conducted that reconnaissance. So much of what they do may actually foil those kind of defenses where the guns are all pointed outward. And we've even seen an interesting tactic where they do partial encryption. So it's almost a bit like they shut down one system. They'll shut down your email, or they'll shut down whatever else it is, and then start to kind of ratchet up the fear and the extortion. And certainly one of the things I see here is they use the power of shame and embarrassment. Companies don't want to deal with this from a reputational perspective. They don't want the regulatory entanglements that they might end up with, or the losses in terms of revenue, not just from the ransom fine or whatever you want to call it, extortion fee, but from business loss that comes down the road.
So given how sophisticated these attacks can be, you use the word devious, what are some of the early warning signs?
You know, I talk about this all the time, that even when sophisticated actors, so whether these are very advanced kind of RAS, ransomware as a service types of groups like BNLian or Medusa or Black Cat Alpha 5, at the end of the day, they still use some pretty simplistic, old, reliable, faithful kind of tools, right? So it's things like compromising accounts. We see MFA bypass is one of the tactics they're using lately. So they use a tool called Evil Jinx that effectively allows you to customize phishing lures for the type of industry or target you're going after. It has its own server. It collects not only your credentials, but forwards them on to whatever the authentication service like Microsoft Azure or Google, and then it captures the token. So you're not necessarily going to see that happening early on, but that's giving them access to the environment. But when they do, we see signs like impossible travel. How is this account in two geographic places that one couldn't get to unless they could teleport? We see signs of lateral movement, new accounts being created, account privileges being escalated, and changes in behavioral patterns, right? So the way that users, devices, et cetera, are connecting to other devices and systems within your environment. So they're all kind of precursors. And in fact, even when it gets to the encryption stage, there's kind of this early moment where they do a bit of like testing. They'll encrypt a few files just to make sure that the algorithms are working. And when they do that, you have entropy over time, right? That's a big fancy way of saying effectively the files change dramatically in a very short period of time. And that you can kind of characterize, or you can create a profile that says, yeah, that's probably ransomware. And so, you know, if you can kill it at the first file, one file or a couple of files on one device in one folder get encrypted and that's it. And to me, that's a pretty good day when you face off against, you know, some of these pretty advanced and determined threat actors.
Those are some great examples of warning signs that would be fairly easy to spot if you had the right tools. What are some of the tools that can help minimize the impact and identify these things before they get too far into your network?
I was just having this conversation with a company yesterday, right? And we were talking about how do you sometimes deal with the kind of defeatist approach when it comes to some of the security tools? Like Mark, you just described to Heather about MFA bypass. So why should I bother with multi-factor authentication? Well, the reason you want these security controls in place, right? None of us are going to leave our houses unlocked at night or leave our cars in our driveways unlocked. We still lock them, yet cars get stolen. And we're doing it to minimize the risk. But more importantly, from my perspective, it gives you the opportunity to detect those early warning signs. So if you are tracking logins, remote logins, if you're looking at multi-factor authentication, so you're seeing, you know, potentially MFA failed authentications, if you're monitoring your network and you're using things like UEBA, so that's user and entity behavior analytics, that kind of creates a third dimension between all of those flat devices and starts to say, okay, Mark is connected to this laptop and he connects to these services at a certain time of day. His profile of network activity looks like X. And suddenly that starts to go out of band a little bit. You're getting spikes in the curves. That starts to tell you that likely my account's been taken over, right? Somebody's moving around and doing other things. So if you have those systems in place, then you can do that. So it is things like obviously those core perimeter defenses I just talked about, but endpoint detection and response. Being able to monitor, so having like a SIEM or an XDR platform, extended detection and response platform, that can look at all the elements in your environment, plus all the users and accounts, plus their privileges, and understand who's in the zoo and what they should be doing, that starts to give you an idea of what normal looks like. And then you start to detect those anomalies. And that's sort of the point, right? Like I said, this is catch it early. It's like cleaning up spilled milk. I will clean up spilled milk all day long, because when you don't, that's what turns into these bad public events where they cripple the organization. And now they're in that sort of defensive mode of like, what do we do? Are we going to pay the ransom? And I can tell you firsthand, these things don't clean up quickly. There is no light switch you flip. We're talking months, if not years, to recover. And sometimes it's extremely costly. One manufacturing firm I know was shut down. They paid a $4.5 million ransom. I think 18 months on, they're still not fully recovered. And it turned out the company was acquired by a larger player in the space. And they lost about 50 to 60 million off the enterprise value when the due diligence discovered this breach.
Yeah. And I can imagine too, we're seeing in the news now some cases of companies that have paid the ransom. They didn't get the decryption key or whatever they were negotiating for. And now they're being hit again with another ransomware demand. So it seems like it's never ending if you find yourself in that situation.
You know, they're more than happy to kick you while you're down. And I've been doing a lot of research on a second book. And some of what I've been doing is interviewing people who are in the Ukraine and Eastern Europe that are dealing with the Russian invasion there. And they talk about this. They talk about how an IT person there, first of all, kind of post-Soviet era, Eastern Bloc, Russia, and so on, they put a lot of focus in their educational curriculum onto engineering and mathematics. And they are extremely strong. And I would easily argue that they are far better than we are in the Western world when it comes to those kind of focuses. And so these people come out. So they have a large pool of capable talent. And then the other thing is, these people can make 10 to 15 times what they would make in a regular IT job being a cyber criminal. So they're kind of motivated. You know, there's a lot of cultural stuff there that's been going on a long time that we talk about the American dream and they talk about Mother Russia. And I'm not trying to make it too political, but the reality is we all live within an ideology that we probably don't consciously recognize on a day-to-day basis when we're making these decisions. So they are highly motivated to do it. And when it comes to the kind of re-ransoming or, you know, boomerang type of attack that you're talking about, it's very true. And I use the analogy of, it's like old smash and grab kind of crime, right? They come into your house, they rob you, they take your TV and your stereo and your valuables. And then they know that you're going to make an insurance claim. And, you know, 6 months later, you'll have got your money and you'll have replaced all your stuff with brand new stuff. And they come back. That manufacturing firm that I mentioned, after the fact, when we were doing sort of the root cause analysis and all the forensics work, I think it was something like there were 17 distinct back doors that they had left in the environment and they were selling them. So, you know, ransomware gang one, I believe it was Conti at the time, right? Or we allege it was Conti. They were reselling back doors. So yeah, that's exactly it, right? At least get to your knees and then someone else is going to hit you. They will do that. And they know you're a target. They know you'll pay. They know that your options get harder on a second go around because your insurance company is probably going to be a lot more diligent, take a lot harder look at you before they just pay out. And, you know, from a regulatory perspective, if you are in one of those kind of industries, that regulator is not going to look as kindly on you. And that's something else I see is that it's like we, to some degree, victimize the victim. Well, you deserve to get mugged because you walked down that dark alley with cyber criminals in it, which is ridiculous. I think we got to get to the point of like, they are victims and stop calling it cyber attacks. We're at a cyber war. I think that's a notion we need to change our mind to and realize these are attacks.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsor.
Adlumin Inc. provides enterprise-grade security to mid-market organizations. Its security operations platform and managed detection and response services combines all your data into one view to illuminate security risks and accelerate security workflows. Security teams are often stretched thin and are faced with increasing threats to respond to like ransomware and data theft. Adlumin's patented technology simplifies these challenges by providing organizations with machine learning detection and automated response capabilities to halt threats quickly. The platform also includes threat hunting, automated incident response, vulnerability management, honeypots, darknet exposure monitoring, compliance reporting and monitoring, and more. Join the conversation and see how Adlumin can enhance your security program without increasing your workload. Visit adlumin.com.
And now back to the podcast.
Okay, so you mentioned a lot of tools that an organization could potentially use, both for detecting attacks and, if we're honest, trying to clean up from a ransomware attack. Those tools can be very helpful. How does an organization know what tool, or probably more appropriately, what tool stack is right for them? How do we know what to look for? What are some of the things that I want to make sure that I have in my environment? And does that vary by industry?
So I think industry to industry, at the end of the day, probably the vernacular and the terminology that we use on certain, let's call them critical infrastructure or core technologies, vary, right? You know, in healthcare, we're going to have a patient record management system. In manufacturing, we're going to have control systems. In law, we have document management, time and billing, et cetera. But at the end of the day, we surround that with everything else. We surround it with Microsoft Office and Azure and Exchange and all those kind of things. So for the most part, they're the same. I think one, you want somebody who can actually focus on those core industry-specific technologies and take a look at them so they know what they are. As I always joke, if you're working in healthcare and somebody spells HIPAA with two Ps, you want to kick them out. I think the other thing is you want someone who's tested. Show me you have dealt with ransomware. So for example, with Adlumin, we have a ransomware prevention service that we've added that looks at the entropy over time, like I said, or we're going to science this one up. But when I take this back to the English language, I'm talking about we're looking at file changes in specific places that we know are strategic starting points. And when we see a change, we isolate the device, we block the account or disable the account that's associated with the activity and kill the process. So that means it stops and we forensically know what was happening. And so one or two files, but it's still like below a percentage of the files in any system. So still like 99.9 get saved. So, you know, I'd be looking at a vendor that's gone up against these companies that knows who they were, that can describe in detail what happened. Because I see a lot of, as you know, just so much hyperbole in cybersecurity. And as soon as somebody comes up with a clever story or a new kind of take on the situation, everyone else jumps on it and they all claim the same thing. So I think it's like, as I always say, if you are new going into combat, do you want to go in with the veteran who knows what it's like and knows what to do? Or do you want to go in with a whole bunch of fresh-faced people who are equally as terrified as you are? And that's the point. If you're reaching out to experts, they better be experts and they better have done it. Unfortunately, I think in security, the certifications are important. Knowing the terminology, being able to walk your way around a network and understand what all the elements are is important. But those are just instrumental things. The intrinsic is, have you seen it before? Would you recognize the signs of it early? And can you do something about it?
Well, Mark, this has been really eye-opening, I think, for a lot of our listeners as far as the signs to look for, things to stop. Is there anything else that you'd like to add?
You know, real quick, when I talked about these sophisticated groups, these ransomware as a service groups, nation states, et cetera, often people kind of disconnect because they say, well, I'm a small hospital in the Midwest and no one knows I exist, or I have nothing worth stealing. And the reality is that these ransomware groups, these nation state actors, they don't discriminate by size. They don't discriminate by zip code. You're all fair game because, you know, at the end of the day, it's just like any business, right? They're going to land some whales and hit a big company and get a $5 million ransom. But in other cases, they're happy to take $150,000 or $200,000 or whatever it might be. And so you are equally a target. In fact, if you look at the insurance data, when it comes to claims that are made, those small to mid-sized companies, they're the ones that actually suffer the brunt of these attacks. It's not the big ones that we hear about or read about in the media.
Mark, thanks so much for being on the podcast.
You're very welcome.
For Cybercrime Radio, I'm Heather Engel. CyberTide is a Cybercrime Magazine podcast series brought to you by Adlumin. Working to revolutionize the way organizations secure sensitive data, Adlumin finds the newest cracks being exploited and shines a light on correcting the issue in real time with expert guidance. To learn more about our sponsor, visit adlumin.com. That's A-D-L-U-M-I-N.com.